Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-789. Press the number 1 on your keypad when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage. Click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will be on the Blog Talk Radio site at that time. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs as well as topic suggestions for future programs. And please, when you sign up for the Ulu community, please use the same email that you used to sign up for Ulu Proper, for us within us. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Simon, who, like me, is a member of Ulu. Our topic for tonight is African views and news. Peace, Brother Thurman. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm good. I'm glad to be in your good company and the rest of the sisters and brothers around the world.
We're glad to have you sharing with us again. What news do you have that you want to share with the family tonight, Brother Thurman?
Yes, started with the news. This is a piece that Sister Poet in Banneker City or Washington, D.C., Laini Mataka, put out. It says that U.S. soldiers don't need passports in Africa. And at a glance at the U.S.-Ghana Defense Agreement, U.S.-Ghana Defense Agreement raises many questions. Article 12 of the agreement states that the U.S. military can use the Accra Airport without any regulations or checks, with U.S. military aircraft being free from boarding and inspection, and the Ghanaian government providing unimpeded access to and use of facilities and areas to United States forces. This agreement allows U.S. soldiers far more privileges than those prescribed in the Vienna Convention for Diplomats, which was something that was done many years ago. They do not need passports to enter Ghana. All they need is their U.S. Army identity cards. They don't even require visas to enter Ghana. They are not subject to customs or any other inspections. Ghana has allowed the United States Armed Forces to use Ghanaian radio frequencies. The stunning fact about this agreement is that, he said, if U.S. soldiers kill Ghanaians and destroy their properties, the U.S. soldiers cannot be tried in Ghana. Ghanaians cannot sue U.S. soldiers or the U.S. government for compensation if and when their relatives are killed or their properties are destroyed by the U.S. Army or soldiers.
You know, that reminds me of a story I heard years ago about the U.S. and Ghana not having extradition treaty, and someone from the U.S. fled to Ghana, and they were staying in Ghana. Somehow they were lured to the airport, and the U.S. picked them up there. So it was not, you know, they figured that since there's no extradition treaty, they're safe in Ghana, but they were not. I don't know who it was that lured them to the airport. Somebody lured them to the airport, then hopped them up and brought them back to the U.S. So that's very interesting information that you're sharing there now, partly because they say that the largest U.S. military base is in Ghana. That's not in the U.S. Yeah, so that bears watching, I think, for a lot of people who are, you know, wanting to go to Ghana to live and stay in Ghana.
Yep. And in terms of being a news piece, when we have reawakened our African mind, we see through the destructive, the foolishness, the outrageousness of what was just read about. Versus, you know, those folks that could think it's all right. And that's why. But to go to something else, I wanted to bring up in terms of news is that in recent in the last couple of weeks or less. I was with a family on a day that it was warm in the 70s, a nice day to get the outside air and all of the benefits of raw, the sun, to shine on your skin and heal your eyes and heal your entire body if you let it shine on all of your body like it needs to. And as we watched the sun, raw the sun shining so beautifully and just warming our spirits, our mind, and our body, we watched for the next few hours these planes spraying some white-looking substance that just they just kept coming back and forth in multiple directions. And they would just go and go out of sight, come back, go in the opposite direction. And it was obvious that what they were doing was spraying this chemical concoction that eventually it began to just dissipate and expand. And to the point that what was going to be probably a totally sunny day, the sun was still there, but it was the sunlight's power and warmth was diffused by this substance that they had sprayed and sprayed and sprayed for the next few hours, that they dulled out the light of the sun. And I would just urge our people to look up, you know, weather modifications and chemtrails because, you know, Dick Gregory, ancestor Baba Dick Gregory, talked about it you know, before he made his transition a few years ago. And it's a horror story, and and as myself and other people were discussing it, there's a lot of our folks that don't look up and watch these things from day to day and nighttime because it happens day and night. And a few people over the years have said that it was just water vapor from passenger planes, which is not true.
Because
there's people that have been up in the air and looked off in the distance, saw another plane going in the opposite direction, and there was no white-looking water vapor behind that plane.
Right.
It's something that's purposefully being done, and it's affecting our planet and our well-being. We need the sun, but we also don't need the toxic, poisonous whatever that they're spraying. And it's something that our people really
Thinking about, you know, we've been hearing for a number of years, Bill Gates and others saying that they want to, you know, do something to block out the sun. And we don't realize that part of what they're already doing that. That's part of what the chemtrail agenda is, to keep the sun. They say it's some particles in that spray that reflects the sun back up. So we don't get all of the rays of the sun that we normally would get.
That's true. And it's outrageous. It's a crime against the universe and all of life, including ours, that when people are awakened, so that's why, you know, the topic African views, we've got to have some African views, and African views in the proper fashion, it's got sanity to it instead of insanity. And and you could apply African views to anything and you come up with a whole different message. It's just like on the Us Lifting Us page last Tuesday, there's a two-hour video by a very knowledgeable, well-studied brother named Yaki Awakened. But it's on the Us Lifting Us Facebook page, and it was posted. It's a two-hour piece. But his topic was, is there a difference in the genetics and other things and the physical makeup of African people versus Europeans. And he got to talking about teeth, for example. And he's deep into health, deep into natural health, plant-based health. But his study, he says, I don't tell my people, he said, I don't tell my people nothing that I can't back up and validate scientifically. So he said, I'm not talking out the side of my neck. And he said the teeth of African people are not the same size and shape. They are wider, and they tend to be, in comparison to the European's teeth are more narrow and more pointy because they have a different physiobiological need in terms of, and especially in terms of what they can eat, and they have teeth that are more capable, suitable for turning into flesh, and we don't.
Right.
And then he got into other things that we have been misled, and he just said he just had to deal with this subject, and it's 2 hours long, but it would be something that would be in the greatest good for us to do. So the ancient Africans left this term called the greatest good, and we should use that as a measurement of anything we're dealing with. And so if we think about what they're doing to block out the sun, just ask yourself, is that the greatest good? No, it's not. It's the destruction of the universe, the earth and the people and all the beings, earthworms, butterflies, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an Asian, one of the Asian countries have developed supposedly a device that when they energize it with a whole lot of power, that it's supposedly able to heat up and get hotter than the sun.
Okay.
Like the last in one of their albums years and years ago said, the white man's got a God complex, playing God. And that's not us. And so in our African views and in our African sanity, we don't recklessly set out to do anything to destroy the universe or the earth, and that's not our way of going about life, and we've got to awaken to that. And another thing in the news that I just want to mention, our liberation and to be free and maintain our freedom is a very serious matter. Do we need joy? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We need joy in spite of the madness. But we should not get foolish about joy to the extent that we indulge in reckless comedy that's destructive to our mind and destructive to the minds of the children. And I saw a picture, and it got my attention, and it showed a brother drinking what could be alcohol, and it turns out that it was beer. And I'm not going to read all of the message, but I saw something told me something ain't right here. So I read the article that when you clicked on it, it said a beer company was hiring a taster, someone who could taste alcohol, beer, wine, and be able to do an analysis of how it tastes and what's not right with it and things like that. And so anyway, this brother shows up at the company to apply for the job. And right away, the people there, Europeans, thought that how can they get him out of there because they thought that he wouldn't be qualified. But in any case, because the brother was persistent, they said, well, give him a drink of a beer and see what his analysis was. And he got very specific about what was in it, what kind of mixture of things were in it to brew it, and they were amazed. And then they gave him some wine, and he named it, and he named the brand name, and they were amazed. Well, anyway, the lesson is not that I'm putting forth is, this was put forward to be, for a lot of people, something to laugh about, the rest of it that I'm getting ready to say. It ain't something to laugh about. It's a serious matter. The third time, before they gave him his third drink, the manager or the owner, whatever, asked his whispered in his secretary's ear for her to go do something and bring back another cup. And I knew that something was really, really wrong. And it turns out that this third cup, it had urine in it.
Okay.
And I'm not going to go into the details of just the urine, but the fact that we would dare trust, we're not using our inner being to guide us in things that just don't even make sense. That and anyway, my perception is that people that posted it thought people were going to get a big laugh out of it. It ain't funny to me, because I remember with black and white television, I saw this as a, whatever my age was, as a younger person, Sammy Davis Jr. movie, a military army movie. He was with some other, with the others drinking beer. And beer, when you drink plenty of it, people urinate a lot. He gets up, had a quart of beer sitting on the table. And I saw this, and I saw through this. I said, no, no, no. Don't get up and leave your drink, even your food, and come back and just continue. He went to the bathroom. He comes back. He picks up that quart bottle and took a big swig, and all of a sudden he was spitting all over the place. And they had urinated in it. And I said, don't you ever get caught in that situation. So that's my point. We should. So the last poet said years ago, one of the pieces said, understand, said the old black man, who's the opposite of you? Understand so that you will know what you have to do. We can't fall for this kind of okey-doke thing. And with regard to African views, we want you, family, to participate, also to ingest whatever you, Sister Q, bring forward and I bring forward. But we've got to get centered and with our mind and get all of this European pollution of the mind, spirit and mind and body out of us. And so African-centered, it is a level of resistance that we must begin to look for among our people. Pick up that thread and do what has to be done so that your people will survive. Three things. First and foremost, he talking about the European, has been able to make us hate each other. He has transplanted that hate and the love for each other for a love of his country. And then it emphasizes again, his country. We must begin to develop, number one, talking about us, and this is the most important thing we can do as a people. We must develop the underlying love for our people. If we do not do that, we will be wiped out. We must develop an underlying, undying love for our people. Our slogan will become first our people, then and only then me and you as individuals. But first the people, before you get into me and you as individuals, our people first, our people. And these are the words from years ago by brother ancestor Kwame Ture, race first. And we've got to do that. And then there's, and we, when we go on with regard to in the, you know, African views, another piece is, African views, what made me come up with that, multiple things, the reason I came up with African views and news as a topic. And as an ongoing topic, I've got a picture. I'm looking at a picture right now, and actually on the Us Lifting Us Facebook page today and for the last few days, because there was a posting that was promoting the death of this call that we're on right now. But it shows a brother sitting on a fabricated out of nature's materials a small shelter. And he's sitting there with the African countryside and sky in the background. You don't see no people. You see greenery. You see some water. But he's sitting there, and he's with just his pants, no shirt, and he's reading a book. And what that touched me, because that's what we need. We need to be learning some of everything, as Malcolm said. Learn some of everything, because you never know when you can use it. And with that said, the next thing I want to hope that the people will ingest this, and that is, culture is a more effective weapon than guns for the purpose of domination. Culture is a more effective weapon than guns for the purpose of domination. For it was a scientific, technical, and technological culture which produced the guns. And it's not talking about us. We're talking about others. The prerequisite any domination, exploitation, and oppression is the denial to the oppressed man or people of his or their human attributes, and therefore, in the first instance, cultural activities. And so if we deny our cultural activities, that means doing what the brother is doing, reading, learning, expanding his mind, communicating with the universe and with the ancestors and with the spirits as a cultural means. Professor James Small said years ago, if we're not practicing cultural rituals, we ain't African. Mm-hmm. But we have a deficiency when what we are ingesting in our mind is a lot of European foolishness and toxic stuff. And the next thing I want to read, which I thought was really, really a serious message here. It takes a monster to kill children, but to watch monsters kill children again and again and do nothing isn't just insanity, it's inhumanity. I'm also looking with that said, in the piece about culture, talked about culture is a more effective weapon than guns. Mm-hmm. And I'm reminded there's a brother, Brother Dr. Ram Bhagat, years ago, could have been 20 years ago, he founded an organization to promote peace amongst our people and our young people at all ages called Drums No Guns. Which is culture, no guns. And we've got to reawaken to the higher level of addressing whatever challenges we have, the highest level. And if the highest level is to be drums and get our young folks to stop shooting each other, drums, no guns, and he's been having success in awakening the spirit mind of our young people and the older ones. And the first piece I read about culture is more powerful than the gun.
Del Jones used to say that warfare is 90% cultural. So we don't think of warfare like that. We think of warfare as just, you know, guns, bombs, and different things like that. But if you understand that 90% of warfare is cultural, is an attack on culture, then you can understand why the purpose of the television, the purpose of the radio, the purpose of the media, the news, all of these different things is to get you out of your culture and into a different mindset. So that's another reason why we need to be careful what we feed our mind.
Oh, my goodness. That's powerful, sister, what you just said. And what Del Jones said. That's good. And I just want to add, mm-hmm. you said we need to be careful about what we feed our mind. So here's another mm-hmm. piece that's related to what we feed our mind. And this was the words of ancestor Professor John Henry Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Peace is not an African word. I'm going to say it again. Chief is not an African word. Chief is a word that European scribes used to demean African rulers and avoid associating them with the kings and queens of Europe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so the kings and queens of Europe, they didn't come first because they didn't know what kings and queens was, or math or science or engineering and building or anything, because this is something else that we need to know in terms of our African sanity and clarity, is that when they came out of the caves, the Europeans, when they came out of the caves, when they found out about Africa, they came into Africa, and African people welcomed them in and taught them civilization, math and science and engineering, and about kings and queens and spirituality and all of those things. And then at some point, they looked at each other and they said, well, where is our history? And where is our written history? They didn't have any because they didn't know how to write. They didn't have cleanliness because they didn't know bathing. And you can look that up. There's a book called Dirt that's about them that came out years ago. And so,
but
what this is saying is that they took, when they learned how to read and write and they started going forward and declaring some of their people as kings and queens and other things, they got it from the people that taught them how to read and write and comprehend such things. And, of course, these were the original African people.
Mm.
So it's something to give some thought to about the term chief in Africa.
Right, yeah. The Moors say that chief was actually sheep, which is a word for king. You know, but they didn't know what they were hearing, so they called them chief instead of sheep, which is, but that was on this side, not on the other side. So proves your point that they didn't have they didn't have that concept. They got it from dark-skinned people.
I get that. And on the cultural side, which is something that we need to do a whole lot more of, and this message is sit with warriors. The conversation is different. Read it again. Sit with warriors. The conversation is different.
Mm-hmm.
And it is.
For sure.
Because we come up with so many things that when we have let our mind be consumed with the distractions and the foolishness of television and movies and things like that, and killer cussing movies, that conversation is not what it would be when you sit with warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at a picture, and I'm looking at a picture of a brother in Africa with his spear, and he's kneeling down over a rock, and he's sharpening his spear. And the message is, the constant soldier is never unready, even once, meaning even once, the constant soldier is never unready.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got we got to let our mind absorb things like this, because otherwise we are distracted with a lot of low-level foolishness and stuff that's not going to inspire us to do what we can do, because we can, I would have to be able to go back to it, but I had recently come across a piece of and a message from Africa, and it showed some African people that had built a cobblestone road. And what the message was indicating is that We don't need to be dependent on nobody else. We can build and rebuild Africa by ourselves. It says it's easier to rebuild Africa by ourselves using our knowledge, labor, and resources than going for foreign loans and aid which will keep our future generations in debt and under the control of foreign power. This is a decision our various governments have failed to take, making us all dependent on others. And we got to stop being dependent. And so here the brother and some others are walking down a cobblestone or big rocks that they had put down, but they made a street, but they're working with what they had. But that is a better choice than allowing others to come in and make us huge loans where then they get to take over oil fields and gold mines and the precious metals that go in electronic parts rather than we do it ourselves.
Speaking of the loans and the aid situation, I saw a couple of days ago where I think it was more than one of the African presidents who have said to, I think one of them was speaking to Macron, the president of France, and I think another one was speaking to the U.S. representative. But what they said was they were not going to accept the LGBT philosophy. And the U.S. had stated that in order to get aid or, the foreign aid that they give to these countries, they must accept the LGBT ideology.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they don't give them money. They give them like credits, X amount of dollars, which they have to pay back in currency, which they have to pay back in money. They give them credits and then they tell them that they have to have particular companies do the work or particular NGOs bring the word or whatever. So that African people basically don't benefit at all from the aid that they get from the Western countries, from the IMF and all like that. They go into debt based on paper, and then they have to pay back in gold and diamonds and oil and whatever their resources are. But it's like me giving you an empty glass, and then you have to fill it up with your valuables to give it back to me. So, but I was, it's good, I think, to see that the African leaders are beginning to stand up for their, like you said, their culture and the culture of their people instead of just rolling over and accepting whatever foolishness is presented to them.
Yes. And to continue on with what you were talking about and talking about Africa, including the leadership, an example of one that stood up and will continue to stand up as an ancestor was former president of Burkina Faso, Thomas Sankara. And I'm looking at the language that he expressed in a picture of him, and he was with a group of African leaders, including presidents from all over Africa. And he said, "I'm the only one here wearing a pair of shoes made by my own people, leather from cows grown by my own people, tanned and processed in my own country. You are wearing shoes from France and shirts from Belgium. You could change the economy of your country if you made your own clothes and ate the foods you grow and developed economy based on self-reliance.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the great ones that we must know about, Thomas Sankara. Thomas Sankara, mm-hmm. when he came in, his administration and the previous administrations, their administrators and presidential staff and folks like that, they had cars, Mercedes. Thomas Sankara said, no, no, no. Got rid of those Mercedes and gave them that needed it a used car to drive. And what did he do?
Mm-hmm.
In 3 or 4 years, he raised the educational level status, you know, I think about 60%. And he told the European from France or wherever that supposedly they had a debt to pay them on an annual basis, he told the African leaders, do what I did, but don't pay them, because it was unjust and it was a robbery in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
They came and invaded us and our land. And so we got to do that. And he had, as a president, I believe it was a used compact car. I believe it was a Toyota. He said, I've got this used car. I got a guitar. I got a refrigerator. And just a couple of other things, and that's all I got. And he lived real simple, but he was improving the intellectual status of the people and the children in the school system and feeding the people. And I'm looking at another picture that says, a nation that cannot feed itself is not free.
No doubt.
We grew up hearing this foolishness about we are here in the land of the free. But when they talked about the land of the free, they didn't tell you that didn't mean us. It meant them. And so if we can't feed ourselves, and people like Sankara was correcting that. And we've got to correct. So it's like I mentioned about African views. We got to correct our mindset. And I'm looking at a picture of a brother that says, we fix the environment around us when we fix the environment inside of us.
No doubt.
And we got to be serious about this stuff. And we need joy, and we need that in our relation, you know, of the opposite sex and our compliments. Compliment somebody that compliments you. The sister and brother compliment each other, and they have a complementary relationship. And there's a powerful and vital book, probably more than one, by Brother Baruti in Atlanta, and he's on Facebook, Brother Mwalimu Baruti. But and he says that warrior compliments need to establish their own personal celebrations of each other no less than once weekly, meaning warrior sister and brother compliments couples. They need to have personal separate celebrations of each other. Time needs to be set aside for only the two of you so that you can solely focus on each other. Relationships require attention, constant, meticulous attention. And this attention cannot be adequately given if every second of our lives is consumed by other frontline work. It must be a time when compliments give their energy to their interpersonal healing and growth.
That's a very good point. Very excellent point.
Yes, this is so.
Yes, we don't even think of that.
Well, I agree. And that's why, as I said before we began to call about, it's vital that we are expressing these African higher level nurturing African views of life. And something else that touches me in a different way from what I'm going to read. I'm going to read this post, and it's posted by someone that I love, but we've got to exchange thoughts. And this says, respect your loved one's lifestyle when planning their home-going ceremony. meaning homegoing ceremony, meaning they have transitioned, they have died.
Mm-hmm.
If you yourself have special wishes for how you want to go out, write them down and have them legally acknowledged. Choose who you want to implement your wishes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we could take that statement and just leave it at that. The words here saying, if you have special wishes of how you want to go out, we, you and I already know, and the listening audience knows, that there have been lots and lots of sisters and brothers in our lifetime that they wanted to go out with a fancy whatever, coffin included, you know. That, and people say, oh, and this was into the thousands of dollars that could be a legacy for children and grandchildren, whoever that needs it. And then another thing that's troubling about the home-going ceremony is that almost always there's a whole bunch of talk in the conversation that's not about the person that we came to their home-going ceremony or funeral service to celebrate. It's about some other sometimes made-up being. But what did the people come for? They came for the one that had made that transition. And in terms of African view, it's anti-us that we would come to celebrate the homegoing of someone and the conversation or the eulogy, as they call it, would be about some often fictional character. And I'll just leave it at that. And then we come from nature. And before the invaders came, we were naturally back to the earth, as some people would use the term, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. But now we've been programmed to think we got to have all of these wrappers around us to be dropped down in the ground and a whole bunch of money given to others. And so most in the U.S. and in other places, a whole bunch of the ones that are providing services to dig a burial plot with machinery ain't us. And so there's lots and lots of companies that's making money day after day burying African people. And African people, before the invaders came, we took care of everything associated with our burial and our burial ceremonies. If you go deep in the right place into ancient Africa, and I said ancient Africa, they had such a high appreciation for the sisters that when the sister made her transition, they kept both tabs on her body for a number of days, and especially until her body had turned rigid, or rigor mortis, as they call it, stiff, because they wanted to make sure that they didn't let her body be taken away by anybody else that would violate her body, even though she's claimed to be dead. And you most people wouldn't say what you just heard me say. But I find it disgusting, to, as I have been three times in the last 3 months or since December. And I've been watching this for years. We didn't come here to celebrate some fictitious character. We came to celebrate the person. And so in African historical, ancient African tradition, we mourned and celebrated the loss of a loved one. Mourned and celebrated. And so the drummers were there, and they mourned and they celebrated and raised up the energy and their love for that person and the memory of them. So I hope that made some sense, sister and family.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Good.
Again, it's a lot of things that we do that we don't think about them. It's what we grew up with, what is all around us.
That's
so
right.
We just fall in, you know. It's, like you said, we're out of our African mind. And we don't necessarily realize that. And we're kept too busy doing this and running after that to sit down and think about anything, much less,
I agree.
You know, what kind of service we would want or even what kind of service someone else would want when they cast. We're distracted by so many things. And I think it would be a good idea for us to make a point of, you know, putting it on our calendar, so to speak, that every day we just sit down somewhere and think about something. You know, just pick a subject and think about it. You know, you saw something on TV. Was that real or was that Memorex or whatever? You know, I think that's important for us to do.
And when you say think, in historical Africa, there was long ago, who knows, hundreds of thousands of years ago, established what's called African deep thought. There were Africans that would spend many of their days, and especially the older ones, sitting underneath a baobab tree or acacia tree. And they would, if off in the distance, you might think that these are some older folks just sitting there, you know, daydreaming. No.
Mm-hmm.
They were the ones that had done what you said, sisters, just sit still and let their inner being reveal and the universe reveal to them things about how to build the pyramids and complex fractal math and things like that, African deep thought. We've got to do that. And one more thing I just want to add. There's an ancestor, I believe, he was a freedom fighter in South Africa, Brother Sobukwe, Mageriso Sobukwe. He said, never pin all your hopes on men, because when he's gone, you will lose your strength. Rather, put your trust in the cause, for therein lies your strength. And so what they're saying in the last line, put your trust, your focus on the cause. And if the cause is African liberation, if I fall down tomorrow, celebrate, mourn and celebrate. But other than that, you've got to keep your eyes on the cause,
mm-hmm.
and keep at it. And when we keep our eyes as a way of living and thinking, that means that when we achieve the liberation, we still got to keep your trust on the cause, because liberation has to be maintained and reinforced.
For sure.
Or else,
brother.
Yeah. Yes.
We have a caller with the hand up, so I'm going to take this call.
Yes.
Caller with the last four digits, 8858, please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment, or ask your question. Thank you.
Uja. Greetings, Nefertem Plur, South Korea. Just wanted to say a great show, and thank you for all you do. I look forward to us lifting us, the community, doing great things for our community going forth in the present.
Uja, thank you very much for that. Peace. Thank you for calling.
Yes, brother.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, Brother Thurman. So we have a few more minutes.
Yes, and I want to thank the brother.
Yeah,
I want to thank the brother again, because he, as I said the last time that he called in, you know, that it would be something that would be good for us to have him come and be a guest on the Dare to Win call. And I always appreciate his spirit and the knowledge and even the books that he was bringing forth the last time. And we've got to be about the thinking, like you said, sister, and into African deep thought. And we come up, and so when we do that, we come up with different insights, concepts, revelations, codes of conduct. You know, we've got that. We're failing if we don't have an African code of conduct. We do, you know, I mean, the affirmations of Mayat, you know, is one that is very, very beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Something I want to read right now is that if it supports the liberation struggle of black people, then it is good. If it is in opposition to the liberation struggle of black people, then it is bad. If it supports the liberation struggle of black people, then it is moral. If it opposes the liberation struggle, then it is immoral. If it supports the liberation struggle of black people, then it is the will of God. If it opposes the liberation struggle of black people, then it is satanic. With this simple key to the mysteries of life, both events and institutions can be judged. I'm going to read this again. With this simple key to the mysteries of life, both events and institutions can be judged. And we've got to be able to judge things with some supporting ways of viewing it, and it's got to make some ethical, the divine sense, natural sense, and all. And if it doesn't, then it's satanic and it's wicked, it's immoral, and all of those things. And when you talked about the African countries more should stand leaders that have stood up and said that they don't support the sexual confused behavior and the feminization. We've got to have some way of analyzing how we judge it. That's not our opinion necessarily, but that it's got valid reason that we should not indulge in such things. And I know our time is running out, but here it is. But I was going to go into some of the medical findings of people that indulge in confusion and that stands out as to why it's a total violation for people to be into sexually confused physical interactions.
Mm.
One last thing, I'll just read this and then I'll stop. And liberation logically comes before development and material advancement. And what I just said there, I've got several images that I've looked at recently that showed parts of Africa. It's got huge, shiny new skyscrapers, and they've got a new bridge connecting one country, Nigeria, and maybe Cameroon, and they've got wealth there where African people have wealth and have huge houses and a staff to take care of their houses and cook for them and clean and wash for them, and they've got high dollar cars. But what I read, the first line was, liberation logically comes before development and material advancement. It will never happen the way or other way around. So when people have all of this stuff and trinkets, material stuff that they lust over, the liberation ain't coming. And it happened that way. Pursuit of liberation and self-sustainment should be placed at a much higher priority than development and material prosperity. To place development ahead of true freedom is literally putting the cart before the horse and self-defeating. When our material existence is constantly under duress from external forces, it's harder to think conceptually and work independently to create solutions to our chronic problems, which is why Africa has to focus on liberation and self-sufficiency before development. It is very much vast, awkward, and they wrote it just like I read it, and self-defeating for all of these African nations to pursue catching up to the first world in development and prosperity when they are still under colonial world control from their former imperial master. The same phenomena on a local and individual level is happening here in the U.S. We don't have systems of self-sustainment and ownership to control our own economic condition as African / Black Americans, but we are constantly trying to chase the bag of these individuals' individualistic pursuit of living the American dream, which has been a cruel irony to our people group, because Americans' dream was largely founded on the back of the African American nightmare of slavery, Jim Crow, and all manner of oppressive systems meant to subjugate our people for the benefit of the dominant group. So in both cases, the continental African and the African diaspora, material advancement for the whole of our people will not materialize until first we mobilize to gain our true freedom as a people, and that is a task squarely in our hands, and none else can provide except the global African family working in a strategic, unifying manner to make that happen. I'm done.
Thank you for that, Brother Thurman. We want to thank everyone that joined us this evening, and we want to invite you to come again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, when we will have another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Peace.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sound. Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sound. While they're standing in the welfare line, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sound. Who are people gonna rise up and get their share? People gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution. About